dormir sem pedir, sem dar seu perdão.
Hello and good evening, folks. You tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca. We're here. It's Sunday, 8 p.m. You're tuned into the Yellow Bridge Road, which is normally CFRC's British and Irish music show. I'm your host, Rue, as always. But we're going to be doing something a little bit different this week. Of course, normally, when you tune in, you'd expect to hear an hour and a half of the best new music coming out of the UK and Ireland. But this week, I have my reasons for bringing you something very different. Now, if you're someone, or if you're something of a music head, you will probably know this week is what is sometimes also called Canada's biggest night in music. It's the Juno Awards. And this year, somehow, our little show got an invite to go and do a little bit of press coverage out there. Not for the main event, not for the main gala where the awards are presented and for the big ceremony that's happening at, as we speak actually, Sunday 8 p.m. So if you're listening to us, listening to our Juno's coverage rather than watching the main event itself, like, you have incredible faith in me, more than I have in myself, but thanks for joining us. But what we're going to be doing is a little bit of Juno's coverage, not so much from the main event, but from sort of the pre-events that happened. Now, if you know anything about the Junos, they've been going on for a little while. They're sort of the highest awards in Canadian music, quite similar to how we covered the Brit Awards a little while ago, the biggest night in British music. We're in the 55th year of the Juno Awards, and they happened this year in Hamilton, as we found out last year, towards the end of the Vancouver Junos that happened in 2025, when suddenly Max Kerman of Arkells came out to accept the passing of the torch and to officially bring the Junos to Hamilton. Hamilton has a bit of history with the Junos. They last hosted it in 2015, I believe. But the first time they hosted it in 1995 was the first time that the Junos were ever taken outside of Toronto. And before this, it had been basically an industry event. You'd get all sorts of people from the music industry in a room. It was a very closed doors event. And moving it to Hamilton in 1995 was the first time that the Junos not only went out of Toronto, although they had once briefly had to move it to Vancouver in 1991, but that was still an industry event. But that was the first time in 1995 when they opened it up to the general public and sort of the fanfare began coming. And there's something about hosting events outside of Toronto, which always has something going on. I mean, I was coming back from Hamilton earlier today, and I was on the train with all the kids that were going to Toronto, going downtown to watch the Jays game. There's always something else going on in Toronto. But as soon as you enter Hamilton, you're just struck by how much Hamilton was ready for the Junos. You know, it's the biggest night in Canadian music, and they're going to treat it as such. As soon as you enter, you're kind of hit by Junos fever. There's so many, placards and posters of performers, of the Junos, of CBC's coverage, of Mae Martin's face, because they are actually the host of this year's awards. And it really kind of gets you excited and gets you in the mood for the Junos. And leading up to the Junos, they really build the hype as well with what's known as Junos Week. So it's sort of a week of events that are happening, of coverage, of all sorts of other special programming that really gets you into the mood for the Junos. And ultimately what the Junos are is a celebration of Canadian music, and that's exactly what happens during Junos Week as well. I made it out there for Juno Fest, which is a two-day series over Friday and Saturday of performances by artists who some of whom are nominated for the Junos themselves, and others who are, you know, rising artists in the Canadian music scene who deserve to be celebrated as well. And they put on shows all over venues across Hamilton or whatever other host city it is. And you just get to enjoy a lot of really good music by upcoming Canadian artists. Like I said, a celebration of Canadian music. And so I'm going to be playing us some music from that. I'm going to play us some Juno nominated artists, some artists that we saw and that we interviewed and spoke to. So we'll be having sort of full-on Juno's coverage on tonight's show. And I hope you're happy to stick around with me for that. We're going to start off first with some music by Cam Cahin. Now, he's been on our show recently, as some of you might remember. He opened for Gurriers last week in Toronto, and he's just put out a new album called Chug, and we were talking all about that. We played some music from it. It's his second album, a follow-up to his 2023 debut album, When It's All Over. And he's just bringing that blend of slightly pop-punk, slightly alternative, slightly rock music, slightly emo music. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening in his music. And he sort of grew up in Hamilton, partly at least. And so Juno Fest was in some ways a homecoming for him. And as part of Juno's week in the lead-up to the Junos, CBC recorded a performance of his at a venue called The Mills Hardware a couple of weeks ago. They released it last week, and I'm going to play us a performance from it. Here's the twist, though. Even though Cam's album Chug literally just came out, the song that I'm going to be playing for us is a brand new song that he's been working on. I was talking to him a little bit after his set, or rather the next day when I ran into him at Dumb Crush's set, and he was telling us that he's already working on new music, and this was one of the songs, as yet unreleased. The song's called Hamilton, and I'll let him tell you all about it when we play the song, but you can find his latest album, Chug, on his record label's page, dinealonerecords.bandcamp.com. And then we're going to play some music from Saya Gray, who performed at the Juno, so we're going to listen to her performance at the gala last night. I'm going to play us a performance of her song, Shell of a Man, and she was nominated in the alternative category for her album, Saya, which was a pretty strong contender for the Polaris Prize last year as well. It's on Bandcamp, sayagray.bandcamp.com. So let's get started off. This is Cam Cahin, live in Hamilton, with a song called Hamilton.
We're going to do another unreleased one. I wrote this song, like, not long ago, thinking about coming back to play Hamilton and just, like, you know, going to Club Absinthe when I was, like, 14 years old, seeing Counterparts. And just how much I needed those shows, man, and the energy of the city at the time. And I wrote this one. It's called Hamilton. Used to make your heart beat fast, laces tie your hair pulled back, can't wait to hear my favorite track, just hoping that same feeling seems to last. Sometimes I just can't handle it. I'll tap your back to lift me up. Some basement down in Hamilton will turn me to a man again. We'll be right back.
to a man again.
There's a difference in visiting a memory and living in the past. I've lasted this long as a rubber ball. You pick me up and throw me up against the wall. How do I get past the past?
The past, I'm still hung up on cobwebs.
Your peace.
Hamilton for the Junos. We're joined by Rachel Bobbitt, who's literally just come off stage, and it's so nice to step out with me in the cold to have a little chat.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I'm excited to be here.
Of course. I have to start by asking, though, like, you know, Junos Week, you've been asked to play. It's a really big deal. People's eyes are on this event, and you've just stepped off, like, one of the biggest stages in the country, right?
Yeah.
How does that all feel?
It feels very exciting. And I mean, especially, like, the other musicians that are on this bill as well are musicians that I really look up to. So, I feel very honored to be able to share the night with them.
And how was the feeling in the crowd today for you? Because I saw, like, a lot of people were coming up and raving to you afterwards about the show.
People were so nice. Like, really kind, very receptive. And in general, the vibe was just really, I think people were very excited to see live music, which feels great for us musicians.
That's true. And you've been at it for a really long time. You put out a first album, a first collaboration back in 2019, an album called When This Plane Goes Down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, yes, it was a little while ago, but it felt much more kind of stripped back, acoustic, kind of like conversational almost, mm-hmm. like you were having like this conversation with someone, a bit reflective. And then last year you released... are you calling it your first solo album? Are you calling it your second album?
Yeah, first solo album, yeah.
Okay, and that one is called Swimming Towards the Sand.
Yeah.
Now that title is giving me that you were kind of reaching for something.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk a little bit about the album, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So firstly, just like kind of your reflections on it, because to me it sounds much more reflective compared to the first album.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think like a lot of the songs I wrote kind of about memories and dreams, and a lot of it is sort of surreal. So a lot of imagery and I think a lot of like reflective moments sort of spurred the writing for that album.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right on with that. I felt the same way writing it.
I get a lot of introspection from that album as well. Like, it seems like you're kind of looking back, you're processing a lot of things, mm-hmm. and you're kind of reaching for, I guess, those sands.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, growing up on the East Coast as well, the connection to the ocean, I've always just found it so, I mean, it's so steady. It just, like, it's always coming in and out, no matter what. So I think that steadiness as well was something that I just have always found really comforting and inspiring.
I want to ask you a lot more about the East Coast after, because it's like such a place with a musical, like rich musical
mm-hmm,
history.
Mm-hmm.
But sticking on the album for a minute, like this album musically, you're stepping forward. Like you're going from the first album being kind of more folky and a bit more acoustic mm-hmm. to the second one. Like when I was walking in, I could just hear like the stacked harmonies, the mm-hmm. layers, the like the electronic bits going on in there too. There's a lot of musical range on this album. Like I'm seeing you going from like almost psychedelic, like droning things on songs like Hands, Hands, Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a much more electropop sound on things like I Want It All.
Mm-hmm.
So like, was that a conscious decision that you want to explore kind of everything? You want it all.
yeah, totally. I think, and thank you for the kind words. Yeah, I think I definitely did want to sort of explore all these different influences. I grew up doing a lot of choir and I feel like I love, like you said, like vocal harmony stacks and, you know, sort of creating different sounds with my own voice. And that is sort of where Hush came from as well, just layering and sampling my voice. So experimenting with that and then some more electronic sounds because I had spent so long doing more sort of like organic, acoustic sort of music. I was just very interested to swing the other way a little bit. I definitely agree. I think the sonic palette for this album was pretty varied and that was very intentional from me.
And it's also like, it's almost like charting new territory because when you tell people that you're from the East Coast, that you're kind of from like the Maritimes, they're like, oh, okay, I'm imagining a lot of like acoustic music,
mm-hmm.
a lot of folk music, maybe even like kind of like traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of step out of that mold while keeping like the heart of being a singer-songwriter
mm-hmm.
at the sort of center of it.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. I definitely think like a lot of East Coast music, a lot of like sort of drony, bagpipe, organy type of music has influenced me a lot. And, you know, also just grew up listening to a lot of incredible East Coast musicians, like the Rankin family, now part of the band Always, which is awesome. So, yeah, I think, like, I love looking at also, like, yeah, Molly Rankin's trajectory into that band, which also feels very, you know, indie pop rock, but she grew up in such a traditionally East Coast, like, fiddle music. Kind of a setting, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you're kind of you're following her footsteps.
Yeah,
in some ways.
I really hope, you know, I hope to, and I definitely feel so inspired by her. So yeah, I'm definitely following in her footsteps as much as I can.
And to come back to, like, the themes on the album and stuff, there's some lines that, like, you know, when you're listening to an album and something just makes you stop in your tracks and you're like, oh wait, go back like 5 seconds, I need to hear that line again. On I Want It All, you've got a line, it does no good to be midway understood. And I feel like that's something so many people feel, where you're like, this half kind of thing is not really cutting it. Like, it has to be kind of all or nothing. So I want to know a little bit about that song.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that, that's so nice. Yeah, that song definitely came from a place of sort of feeling pretty apathetic and a little underwater in my own life. Yeah, sort of like, it started from this image of when I was a kid and I would, like, lay in the ocean and just have the water covering my ears so I couldn't hear anything, but I could still see things, and it just felt so like everything was muted and everything was a little bit further away feeling. And sometimes, you know, on a downswing in life, it can kind of feel that way. So yeah. I think the, you know, does no good to be midway understood to me is like, if you don't let people in, and if you don't, you know, get up and, you know, try to express even like your terrible, darkest feelings and emotions to your friends, then it's gonna be way harder to get out of those ruts on your own. Yeah, so that's kind of where that song roughly came from.
There's like a resolution and growth in the song as well, where you kind of have a realization of like, you've got to open the door, you've got to open the window.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, there's like such visceral imagery there, where you're like, you know, just like stomach down. I'm trying to remember the lyric exactly, but it's like, you know, flopping in the water, stomach down.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is that sort of defeated sort of feeling, which I feel like everybody is like at some point or other being like, I actually cannot fathom getting up right now. Mm-hmm. And sort of that same feeling.
And maybe sometimes it's kind of nice for 2 seconds to just lie there in the water.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take it all from me.
talk about the whole like Nova Scotia music scene as well. So like what kind of music were you like listening to that made you think, okay, I'm gonna, you know, get into music, I'm gonna start the whole songwriting thing and like doing it in that style?
Yeah, I think growing up in Nova Scotia, music was definitely a big part of my mom's side of the family, especially like kitchen parties and lots of fiddle music. And you know, my poppy was the kind of person who could like pick up any instrument and know how to play it just innately. So yeah, lots of fiddle, lots of accordion and guitar and piano and lots of dancing. And so I think like it was always seen as a very shared experience to make music. And then, you know, I think I left Nova Scotia, I was 17, so I didn't really get to experience the Nova Scotian music scene like to its fullest extent. But when I was younger, there was definitely a lot of choirs, I think, were a really big thing for me, and a really big inspiration in terms of just like the ways that music can move you and make you feel part of something sort of intangible. So yeah, choir definitely was a big influence for me when I was younger.
It also sounds like the live side was a much bigger influence as well. That it's not just that you're listening to a lot of music, but you're experiencing a lot of music yourself. Like you said, kitchen parties, or even just like being in choirs, being in these like musical circles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're experiencing it kind of live first.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm interested in how you like bring the live experience out, because like obviously your music now is like quite layered, there's so much stuff going on, and you have your band that comes out with you live on stage. How do you like translate that energy?
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge to figure out how exactly I wanted to get all the layers in and still feel like fulfilled by it all. So I think, you know, we got a sampler going, which is really effective. Sort of adding a sampler to like elements that are organic, so keeping me playing live guitar and obviously singing all live, and then having samples that are just sort of triggered as well.
You're going on a pretty exciting tour later on this summer. You're going to be playing kind of North America, you've got some Canadian dates, and then you're also doing the US East Coast, and you're touring with Leah Papaskamps, who's also playing Juno's Fest today.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Very excited.
I'm so excited. Yeah, she's a musician I've been a fan of for so long. I think she's absolutely incredible, and it's like a dream of mine to be able to see her every night for 2 weeks. So yeah, I think it's gonna be so much fun.
And first American tour as well?
Not the first, but first in a little while. We had some issues with our visas, as has a lot of the world.
A lot of musicians have been saying that lately.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a wild and in a lot of ways a horrible time, but I also think that any times I've played in the States in the last few years, it's always been really striking how much it means to the people who enjoy live music and, you know, come out and just be like, yeah, stuff is crazy, but we're really grateful that you guys came out here. And so yeah, it's nice to like connect across the border, even though it also feels really weird and scary at the same time.
I've heard a lot of American bands that have come up here say something similar, where they feel very grateful for like being able to make that connection and have the music mean something more, because now it means you're able to connect across divides and you're kind of able to come together and form community.
Yeah.
So like that's going to be quite an experience when you go out there and you're kind of, you're representing that power of music every time you step out on stage.
Yeah, that's so nice.
A lot of responsibility. And what else is coming up for you next? Because I saw that you've been putting up a couple of covers. Some of them are from songs that were on the last album, but there's a few, there's I think one that I saw that seems completely new.
Yeah, there are. We're in the recording phase right now, so new songs will be happening very, very soon. Like in the next couple months, so that's really fun and very exciting. And then just writing a lot. I've been trying to mostly focus on that at this point, so writing lots and some new songs on the way as well.
Is this album 3 then? Like, is this looking like it's gonna be album 3?
The songs I'm writing right now, yes. And then the songs that are coming out are sort of like a little, almost like an extended version of the first album.
Okay.
A little addition, yeah.
So it's going back to like that stripped back kind of sound.
Yeah, it's in a similar world for sure. Yeah.
Okay. And do we know anything about like this extended version, an EP, an album, singles, anything that's kind of on the horizon right now?
Yeah, definitely like a little a little collection, I would say like a little EP, and then after that prepping for another album.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I have to ask about, because one of the first things I saw of yours was a little while ago, because you played at the TPL reference rooms.
Yes.
Which
yeah,
is
yeah.
Just, it's such a beautiful place to set up. But like, what was that like for you? How did that come about?
Yeah, it was so cool. I love that reference library. I think it's like one of the most beautiful buildings in Toronto. And my manager, Peja, we were just brainstorming ideas for a live session, and she was like, it would be really cool to do it at the reference library. And yeah, I was like, that would be incredible. Thank you. Yeah, I was like so happy with it, and honored that they let us do that. And they're also like so excited to do that for musicians. Like, they told me, they're like, tell all your friends that they want to rent out our space. Like, we love to have people come in here and do that. So if you're a musician and you want to do a live session,
the word out there.
Yeah, the Toronto Public Library loves to have you do it. So it was super fun, and they were awesome.
And very like contravening of like conventions to be like, I'm gonna make noise in
exactly.
a library.
Totally. That's kind of what we felt like too. It felt very wrong, but also really fun.
And also, I have to ask, as Kingston's kind of major campus station, any Kingston kind of plans in the future?
I believe that I am playing Kingston on the Leah tour.
Okay.
But I actually don't know for certain. I should know that. I will double check, but I think so. And if not, then we'll make it happen, because I do love Kingston. I've played there once before, and it was awesome, and it was so beautiful. So yeah, I want to go back. Absolutely.
And where can people keep up with your stuff and find out when these tours are happening and when Kingston's happening?
Yes, my Instagram is a classic place to find that out. And then my website as well is just like my first name and my last name, Music, Rachel Bobbitt Music.
Okay. Well, Rachel, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your Juno's weekend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Your questions were so thoughtful. So thank you.
Open a line of communication. There's a fire in the haven now. Molten truths out of ugly nothings. You stare into me now. How was I to know that things were going so sour? But a lack of all that was.
Welcome back, folks. That was a bit of Rachel Bobbitt. We caught up with her just outside the Underground in Hamilton, where she was performing on Friday night as part of Juno's Fest. And this is all happening in Hamilton in the lead up to the Juno Awards, which are happening tonight. And if you're tuning in, listening to me instead of watching the Junos, thanks so much for joining us. My name's Rue. I'm your host for tonight and always. And we were at Juno's Fest, kind of everything except for the main awards. So I'm going to bring you a lot of the pre-coverage, but obviously we've got to talk about the awards themselves. Although if you joined us midway through the show, I should also let you know what we listened to just now. So we also started off the last set, the beginning of the show, with some music from Cam Cahin. We heard a song of his called Hamilton, as yet unreleased, and this is new stuff after his album Chug just came out. Also, as a side, he might be joining us on the show quite shortly. So, not tonight, but it's going to happen in the future. We've been talking about it, so look out for that. We also had some music from Sarah Gray, who was at the Juno's Gala last night, and she performed Shell of a Man at the ceremony. I have my thoughts about, you know, everything being revealed during the gala. I feel like it kind of spoils the surprise for Sunday. Like, why not just hold that all in? If they want to do some categories untelevised, then only do those categories and leave the televised categories to be announced and, you know, with the full surprise on Sunday. It's really weird to me that we already know all the winners, because then what's the point of watching on Sunday? But I can tell you a little bit about some of the winners. So I'm going to talk about The Beaches, aren't I? They won for Best Rock Album for Last Girls at the Party. It's just been a year of The Beaches, really. I mean, it started off with Blame Brad, Blame My Ex, you know, the single first dropping, and then the album Blame My Ex, and then they kind of, that song goes viral, it becomes one of the biggest songs in the world, the album comes out, Blame My Ex becomes one of the biggest albums in kind of alternative and rock music globally. And the follow-up from that, people have been really waiting for this album, and The Beaches leaned into their party girl era. But it's not all Happy at the Party. There's some really heart-wringing songs on the album as well, like Lesbian of the Year. And it was just getting bigger and bigger for The Beaches throughout the summer. I mean, we went where? Coachella, Lollapalooza, a bunch of other really big festivals and stages, and it all culminated in their tour ending last November or December, it was, at the Scotiabank Arena. Huge show, their biggest show ever, and the CBC was there actually taping that show, so I'm able to bring you part of that performance. It was just such a majestic show, and I think it means a lot to everyone from Toronto, and it's a deserved win. And again, it was all in pretty strong competition categories as well. Imagine beating out Bryan Adams to win Best Rock Album. They were also up against Grandson with his album Inertia. They were up against the Bluestones. I was going to say Kingston's own Bluestones, but they are kind of half-based here. Like, Justin is based in Kingston now. Also against The Damn Truth and 3 Days Grace with their last album, Alienation, as well. So it's been a Beaches year. And because the CBC filmed and recorded that performance, I'm able to play us that very song, which I think they started their set with, coming out, walking out at Scotiabank Arena in front of 21,000 people. Last Girls at the Party. So I'm going to play us that. And then we have another interview for you. I caught up with Sister Ray, who is Ella Coyes, an Alberta musician now based in Toronto, who writes kind of indie folk, slightly country, maybe even alternative songs that really come from the heart. And this was a really incredible album that also got nominated for the Adult Contemporary Album of the Year. Ultimately, it lost out to Sarah McLachlan, Better Broken, which was an album that we had picked for our year end list last year. But I caught up with them after their set at The Underground, the very same venue that we talked to Rachel, where we also got to see incredible artists like Bells Larson playing right after them. I should say, the album's called Believer, and you can find them on Bandcamp at sisterray780.bandcamp.com. But let's get started off with Beaches. Here comes the party, the last girls at the party, live from Scotiabank Arena on CFRC Radio. We're here in Hamilton for the Junos. We're joined by Sister Ray after a really incredible set.
Thank you.
Firstly, I guess welcome back to Hamilton. Not that I'm from Hamilton, but we meet here in Hamilton.
Yeah, well, welcome back to you as well.
First time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Our station's based in Kingston.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
It's Queen's University's campus station.
Okay, I see. Nice. Well, welcome to both of us then.
Yeah, welcome to both of us. Yeah. I think you're a bit more regular in Hamilton, but this time feels different, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
Very special moment, I'm sure, like to be playing for an occasion like the Junos. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it does feel different. Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like it's been building up a bit for you because your debut album, Communion, got the 22 Polaris
22,
long list.
Yeah.
And then last year you got the long list for Believer as well.
Yeah.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah.
This time at the Junos.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And that's the one you'd want, right? Like, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how was it, like, out on stage tonight? Because, like, obviously there's a lot more eyes on, like, venues around town and shows that are happening here because of the whole Junos Week thing.
Mm.
So I feel like, is the pressure a bit higher?
Yeah, I think the thing about these gigs is you sort of, actually, you don't know what to expect when you go to something like this. And I think most of the time it turns out to be a pleasant surprise because people are engaged and interested and sort of looking forward to a long period of time of music versus just sort of one night of a show or something. And I, you know, my friends are here and peers. And I think that's the big thing is peers, that there's so many people here that are working. And the nicest thing is when there are other people who are working that come to your show.
It makes it feel more like a sort of community thing,
yeah,
rather than you on stage kind of talking. Like,
yeah, people. Like we're all in on the same thing, mm-hmm, sort of. And we're all here to participate in the same thing, which is nice, yeah.
I feel like there was a communal kind of experience sharing thing going on today. Like you were on a roll on stage. The stories were coming thick and fast. People were really engaged in it, and it felt like, I guess at that point, it becomes like more than just your story. It's like, it's our story.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think shows like this too, where I haven't played in a little bit maybe, and I think I'm also a little nervous, which doesn't happen very often. But maybe this is also the trade-off of when you play for your peers, it's a little bit more nerve-wracking maybe.
Yes, it's people who know what you're thinking. In the sense,
yeah, it's like people I spend private time with.
And how the performer's mind works and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I think people I spend private time with, and so they know what the songs are about. There are people that I go to dinner with and I talk to the things that are going on in my life about, and then they become a song. And so it's funny to play them for those people. But it was fun. It's fun.
And I kind of want to talk about those songs and what's going on in there, because I was reading up about like the process behind your album Believer, and you kind of just went into it with like a goal of almost like writing a song a day, regardless of how it turns out or like how complete it is or whatever it is. And that's like a pretty bearing process. Like you get, I guess, you don't get that chance to maybe filter and fine tune and like cover up those stories and those emotions, and they just kind of come out really raw, really visceral, and I feel like that has come through on the album.
Mm. Well, I think there's something that people say a lot about the sophomore record, that there's the sophomore slump a lot of the time.
That's true.
Yeah, and I think that you have forever to make your first record. You have so long to curate your first record. And my second record, I wrote really quickly. And so it's not necessarily songs that are on the record that are these song-a-day songs, but that was the essence of the process.
That kind of gets the rusty taps open and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And that you're willing to engage in a mistake. Something I find so funny in songwriters that I know is they'll have songs that they think are not good, and they maybe end up being their best songs.
Their best songs, yeah. Often.
Yeah, so often, right? And I think this was something that I was interested in doing this. Like, how do I engage in that in real time? And
and to stumble upon those good mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. And let them be and know what that is and be, I think, less afraid of making mistakes.
And I feel like it's also kind of meditative in some ways. Like, it feels a bit like journaling, that you're kind of going out there, you're kind of making yourself think about, like, these things that have happened in your life, but in a more kind of artistic way or in a more critical way, so you're not kind of just, like, you know, sleepwalking through life or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the song A Day thing was fun. I was doing it with my producer at the time, so we were going back and forth, which was nice because it wasn't lonely. It was with someone else.
Yeah. Again, the whole communal experience.
Yeah.
Even if in a smaller group.
Yeah, and I think there was something that was so nice about that sort of being the preamble to the record, that the person that I was spending every day with making that record, before we made it, we were very used to kind of fumbling in front of each other and being a little bit humiliated, but also being accountable to each other, that we wanted to show up for each other and just let the songs be what they were day of. So yeah, like for sure, kind of journaling in real time. It was really, I don't know if I would do it again, but I'm glad that I did it then.
And I remember on stage also when you were kind of giving the whole story of you were talking about new songs that you've been writing. Mm. You were talking about the song about, like, being dumped on New Year's Eve.
And New Year's Day.
New Year's Day. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's even worse because that's a new start. That's not stuff you can leave behind in the old year.
Sure, yeah.
And, like, that's kind of like, you said, I think, something like, I'm remembering this for later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel that kind of thing coming out there too. And then you put it, like, in this unvarnished way.
Mm.
Is that, like, a kind of cathartic process? Or is it, like, when you step out on stage and you have to, like, relive that over and over again?
Well, I think there's something about when you do it on stage that it kind of becomes new every time, actually, because it's different people and it feels different in every room. And so I think it's something that's a lot more, like, cathartic and interesting and fresh feeling, instead of just doing something like kind of trying to dig something out that's in amber.
Yeah.
You know, it's not trying to dig something out that's in resin. It's doing something new and refreshing life, I think.
And it's a much more spontaneous album for that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also kind of want to talk about, so you're from Alberta, you're kind of based in Toronto now.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in some ways the Alberta kind of experience filters through a Toronto lens and comes out in your music as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it comes out through this kind of Toronto indie filter, but it's still there, like, in kind of in your writing, in the sort of, like, the soundscapes as well.
Mm.
Like, do you know the band Truck Violence?
No.
They're kind of newish, but I think they're also from Alberta, now based in Montreal.
Okay.
And they were kind of talking about how, like, the vastness of, like, the sort of, like, swathes of Alberta land, the prairies, kind of comes through in their music. And I hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear a little bit of that in your music, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I do feel like my first record feels so Alberta to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my second record does really feel like someone who moved to a city who is from Alberta.
You're in between those spaces.
Yes. Yeah. But I think there, the vastness is really true. I think, and I hear that in a lot of Alberta musicians. It's a lot of big sky music. And we really appreciate that. I think you hear that. And I don't feel that's something that I will lose ever. But maybe it's something I hear in my last record that I'm maybe longing for a little bit more. But I do think that the Alberta space is very true and real in a lot of Albertans' music, yeah.
Yeah. And where do you see this going on album 3, if that's already a thing in your mind?
I don't know. This year I'm spending a lot of time just sort of doing singles throughout the year and trying to take a long time to write this record. I didn't have a lot of time to write my last record, which is sort of why it was like the song a day urgency feeling. And I want to try to not do urgency this time.
Just take your time and like have those things buried in amber come through next time.
Yeah.
And you're going on tour pretty soon. You're going to be playing, I think, big theaters with Bahamas.
Yeah.
We were also at the Junos earlier. They were the Songwriter Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like everyone is here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty big tour. Like when you go out on stage, you do the whole, like, the almost raconteur thing with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
How does that translate to theaters? Because I feel like that intimacy kind of gets lost when you can't really see the last people's eyes.
Oh, no. You know what? That's such a fun thing about doing theaters when it's like that is in rooms like where I was playing tonight,
mm-hmm.
you can hear everybody. But in theaters, you actually can kind of hear the audience a little bit better. You can... just because of the way that the space is, the acoustics are so built for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the theater is nice because people, A, feel a little bit more anonymous. So I think they're a little bit more willing to give up to be emotive, which is really nice. And it works better for me because I like that they're anonymous. You know, I feel a little bit more free in doing it, and I'm a little bit less worried when I look out and I think, oh, I made eye contact with this one person when I was saying this thing, and maybe I'm gonna dial it back. But when you're in a theater, because you can't see anybody, you just feel so free to do it, and there's a very deep and true collective spirit where I feel it is very fun and successful to do those things.
I guess it removes the accountability for everyone.
Yeah, well, that's what's so special about it, I think, because it's hard to be emotive, I think, in smaller spaces for a lot of people. But when you're in a bigger space and you sort of can't see each other and you don't know each other,
and the lights are down.
Yeah, there's a real freedom to that. And so I think that's the space where it's the most open,
mm-hmm.
To be that way.
And I just want to kind of come back to like the themes in your music, because it is there's a vast, vast variety of things that you're touching upon, because you can go from one song being like a really sweet song dedicated to your brother to another song where you were today talking about like European kissing in Spain. Then there's songs about Dufferin Law,
mm-hmm.
and just like dying from weed in the back of a taxi. Like, sure. There's a lot going on in there.
Sure.
How do you then wrap all that stuff into a single album?
Well,
two albums.
Well, I think what, like most of those songs that you were talking about are from my last record.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of what it is about is sort of like grappling with the push and pull of openness and intimacy,
mm-hmm.
and just... yeah, being in the world and I think wanting to be a person that is very open, but having a hard time being very open, and the situations and the places that you find yourself in which you have to confront yourself.
It feels almost like a real life exercise of like, go out there, say everything, and then you've got the guise of the artist that you can always kind of fall back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe sometimes when it's cathartic in real time, then when you listen back to it, you're like, oh my God, I didn't. It's like when you read back your journal or something, when you're really going through it,
yeah.
and you're sort of embarrassed by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's similar, but then I get the nice thing of it's in.